Well. Hello, and looky there. It's Robert and Fish and Frank. He's back. The world traveler finally landed for a little while. I don't know. We're going to have to put an anchor on his butt.
Not going anywhere for another year. Unless somebody dies.
For a year?
At least.
Oh, okay.
At least.
Well, anyway, this is Radio Fishing, as you guessed, because that was the thing you clicked on that said Radio Fishing. So we're going to call this Radio Fishing. And we're here. We're going to talk about fishing and area fishing report.
Sounds good to me.
What was up with Costa Rica?
It was incredible.
Yeah?
Yeah.
What'd you do? I mean, you went back down and... I heard you were wrestling crocodiles.
A little baby crocodile. It sounds more impressive when it's wrestling, but I just grabbed a little guy. Like a two-footer. He was just sitting on the sidewalk outside of the hotel room. And I'm not going to let him just sit there and not have to at least get a picture with him.
So, you see a crocodile laying there, and your first instinct is to, well, let's pick him up and get pictures.
Yes. Well, I mean, you took me to Costa Rica, 12, 13 years ago, and fulfilled an absolute phenomenal dream of catching a rooster fish.
Right.
But I love the plants, I love the reptiles, and to go back there and do some other stuff, fulfilling other little dreams.
Well, you just went last spring with a whole group of guys to snake hunt and find all that. You and the FWC guy and a couple of 10 other ones. So you guys all went down there and do that.
Yeah, that just stumbled upon. That was totally unexpected to go and do that. That was cool.
How was this trip finding critters compared to that trip?
More eyeballs looking for reptiles down there was easier on the last trip.
You guys found a lot of stuff on the last one, but you guys found a lot of eyelash vipers and all these poisonous things. But this time you got to see a Fertilance, one of the deadliest snakes in existence.
Yeah, but that was in a zoo, unfortunately. I didn't get to see one in the wild, but I got to see more eyelash vipers and one different color phase eyelash viper that I haven't seen before.
Now, these are extremely poisonous snakes.
Fairly venomous, yeah. They're not going to kill you, but it's going to hurt.
An eyelash viper will just mess you up and not make you dead.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. And you got to play with a sloth.
I got to pet a sloth in the wild, not in a zoo or a rehab center. There was one on the side of the road in a tree, and we climbed up and videotaped it and took some pictures real, like, inches away from its face, and... Once again, it was so close. I had to touch it.
Yeah, you had to pat it.
Yeah,
I got, you know. So if you're wondering what Robert does in his spare time, he goes fishing, and then he goes chasing poisonous snakes and pet sloths and, you know, stuff like that. Picks Russell's crocodiles.
Yeah, it was fun.
You got to start saying crikey.
Right. Yeah.
As long as I don't. But I might crikey. Right?
Those guys have got much, much braver than I am. I mean, I'm fascinated by it, but I'm still overly cautious by it.
All right. So, but anyway, it was fun. Just give me a little background on and an insight into Robert. He's nuts. Okay. So, if it's poisonous, and you got bit by something down there.
I got bit by a couple bugs that I have no idea what happened. One bug the first night, the second night, swelled up my whole right side of my hand. Really bad. And then the third to the last day there, one bit my knuckle. That one swelled up and it actually blistered up almost like a fire ant bite, but the whole knuckle and the existing finger around it all swelled up.
It looks like a double bite. It looks like a spider bite.
Yeah, so
it looks like elongated. It's more I don't know, but it's not round,
right,
the way a small pincher would be. It looks like a bite, like a spider bite.
Yeah.
So, anyway, well, you got back with all your digits and extremities intact, and you're not in the hospital, so
exactly.
All good. We're going to get to radio fishing here. Let's see. Starting up the Peace River, lots and lots of little redfish moving.
Yeah.
Where do they... I mean, all of a sudden...
It's like a light switch.
Yeah, you're sitting there and you're fishing, and there's nothing... And then the next day you go back, and there's 200 little redfish there.
Yeah. I've never understood that.
I mean, it's like they're hiding, and all of a sudden, okay, guys, come on, let's go.
Yeah. It's the most bizarre. it's one of the more bizarre things that happens in the harbor every year, and I nobody can really explain it, because like you said, it's literally like a whistle and they all just pop up.
Yeah.
I mean, what are they all hiding under the dirt, you know, with a little straw sticking out of the mud to breathe?
Yeah, I mean, they're literally nowhere to be found. You don't see any signs of them, and then one day they're just everywhere.
Yeah.
And I don't get it. I wonder, you know, I know they like the sawgrass and they live up in the sawgrass. I wonder if they're just buried way up in the sawgrass. Is it either that or they'd have to be in deep water somewhere.
Yeah, I mean, that's very possible. I think you might have it hit right on the head, because during the summertime the tides are so high that they can get back into those areas where nobody can really get to.
The only thing I was thinking too is that back in the 50s when they were starting to build this area, they wanted the fish to be able to get to back in to eat the bug larvae, and they dug these ditches through the sawgrass area and the mangrove areas, and literally they were mosquito ditches, and with the theory being that, you know, if the fish could get there, they would eat more of the bugs.
That makes sense.
And
they were actually thinking back then, huh?
Yeah, they dug a lot of ditches through the sawgrass and around in the mangroves, and they're literally called mosquito ditches because they were there for mosquito control. And it would be a very plausible thing for them to have gone, you know, when they're very small, I mean, talking quarter inch, half inch, you know, getting back into that sawgrass through the mosquito ditches, and then just one day, all of a sudden, it gets a little chilly, and they just boil out.
Right. No, that would make perfect sense, and it's nowhere anybody can get to.
No, you can't get back in.
I mean, unless you walk, and even then, you're probably up to your kneecaps or further in mud.
Oh, I would say up to your armpits in mud. You know, I've gotten out of a boat back there trying to do it, and couldn't actually finish getting out of the boat, because I never found bottom with my feet.
Oh, yeah, never mind that.
Yeah, no, that wasn't.
That sounds like Louisiana.
That was scary.
I've heard of guys talking about that in Louisiana. It's the same way. I mean, you can get back in there with your big, you know, 20-foot boat, and you're in 2 feet of water, but you get out, and you're in 8 feet of muck.
Yeah, yeah, and that happens a lot in the sawgrass areas, especially in the mosquito ditches, because they were actually deep at one point. And so there's a bottom down there, but it's probably 5 to 8 feet down, and the rest is just very light silt, kind of like quicksand, though, because if you get into it,
right.
you got to get
sucks
out.
Sucks right
because,
around you.
Yeah, it will embed around you, and it makes it very hard to get out. The way to do it is to move your feet back and forth very slowly and make yourself a hole. If you try and, you know, like, the more you vibrate your feet, the more you pack the dirt around them. So
right.
You got to kind of create little holes to get out. And it's a booger. I mean, you...
It's kind of like when you were setting pilings up there in Jacksonville, it would sink down into that muck.
Oh, well, that was a whole different muck, but it was, there's just a lot everywhere. Everything changed. It's probably about 20 years ago when things really started changing. As more development came up, more of the silt flowed in, and the more the silt came up, the less sunlight to the plants, so
right.
It killed the plants from the lack of sunlight. And so then there was nothing to really kind of clean the water. And
we altered the water flows so immensely in every one of these ditches and canals and lakes. And
yeah, everything has just been crazy over the last 20 years. But the good news is lots of little redfish up in the river. Now the tarpon, what the heck is that? All right. Yeah, let me just get rid of some of that. I don't know where all that was coming from. That seems to have fixed it.
Yeah, it did. Big time.
All right. Well, look at him learning the control board. Wow.
Hey.
But tarpon are moving even further up the river. I mean, we've had little reports from Arcadia all the way up towards Wauchula, some of the deeper spots in the river. Aaron Lake has some tarpon in it, the mouth of that. It's really deep there. Tarpon are going up looking for winter homes and hanging out, so they're very hard to find on the river right now.
Which is another one of those fish that all of a sudden makes a disappearing act up there and all of a sudden shows up overnight.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's another one. And how does a 100-pound fish all of a sudden just poof, gone, and all of a sudden poof, he's there again in the spring?
It's magic.
Yeah, it's just one of those neat oddity things.
Yeah, it really is. But coming down around the 41 bridge, I-75 has got some snook on it. Best way to do it is either with the storm or the gulp, the swim baits. But the trick is you got to get deep. You got to get down where those fish are. And right off the ends of the bumpers, get your boat back, anchor up, and cast at the bumpers. But let the thing sink. You can't splash and start to reel. You're dealing with 6, 8, 10 feet of water, so you've got to get that bait down to where the fish are. So cast along the bumper as much as you can. Let it sink, even if you hit the bottom. And
it's
then
very
start
similar to worm fishing for bass.
Almost, except you don't really want to be bouncing it off the bottom. You want to be just above.
Maybe there, but like Eljo Bean, bouncing it a lot of times works real, real well.
Yeah.
But it's still the kind of similar concept of letting it get all the way down as close to the bottom as possible.
And then when you get around 41, there's some ladyfish there, a little bit of Spanish mackerel, nothing thick yet, but some trout, some ladyfish, snook. The snook has really moved in there. On and off, that north end of the bridge has really been wrecking some redfish right around the power lines. And really still, it was super hot for a while. Now it's kind of hit or miss. You're going to have one day that's pretty good, and then a few off days, and then one day that's pretty good. Hopefully you can figure out which day that is. Coming into Port Charlotte Canals, snook.
The snook are starting to move in real good. You know, and that's another thing like that surprises me. This cold front was a pretty darn significant cold front.
Oh, absolutely.
The snook never stopped chewing.
Everywhere. Everything I've heard, the snook are eating and eating and eating.
Yeah. I mean, it's odd. I mean, usually snook are one of the first ones to get lockjawed when a front comes through. You know, some of your other fish will still chew your sheep's head or your trout, but snook usually shut down pretty good when it's a real strong front like this. And to have them chew this significant, it's pretty impressive.
I've been maintaining that we lost a lot of the slow-minded, let's just face it, the stupid, lazy snook died in that freeze.
Yeah.
And this is a more intelligent, stronger breed of snook, that the ones that are left, because they weren't the lazy ones who hung out right in the ditches off the mangroves when the tide went down. They're the ones that left the flat. They, you know, got to the deep water. They actually move and everything. And it really is a stronger variety of fish. Genetically, I mean, we were left with a much better grade.
Right.
And so that freeze actually kind of benefited the snook populations. We got less of the lazy, stupid ones and a lot more aggressive, less lazy fish.
Right.
So you're not going to see, even if we get a freeze this year, you're going to see very few dead fish. There's always going to be a few, but...
Always.
Yeah, it's these fish are smart enough to get to deep water in the cold weather, more insulated. And I think that's a lot of what might be happening is they're feeding in preparation for the cold and not being able to eat. So they can just lay up with a full belly for a week or two or three until the water warms up.
It was still pretty interesting to see him do that, though.
Well, that was definitely a Frankism. It had nothing to do with a truism.
No, but I mean, it's a very, very good one to think about, without a doubt. I mean, anytime you have major changes, you know, in evolution or whatever, you're gonna see snook stuff.
Go to sleep about around 60 degrees. They're very, very lethargic. They're an exceptionally tropical fish, and so as this water drops down, they know they might go through a period of, or quite a period, where they really are immobile,
right,
almost dormant. And one of the reasons you're not allowed to pick a snook up, whether it's dead and floating, because it might appear to be dead and floating, when in reality, I've gone up to some of the dams on the spillways on 41, and literally you could reach between the rocks and grab a 40-some-inch snook.
Right.
Pull him out by the, you know, his jaw, look at him, inspect him, and then just insert him back into the hole and let him lay there. And
whole new meaning to noodling.
Yeah. I mean, it was, you know, it's just amazing. But the water temp was just a bit below 60, and they couldn't move, you know. I'm sure they didn't like being held and inspected. You know, the alien, okay, yeah, we're going to probe you. Yeah. All right.
I saw Elvis.
Yeah. Elvis was there. He held me. But I promise you, I didn't probe any snook. So anyway, I'm not sampling farts. I don't know why. It's such a ridiculous concept. Anyway, back to the fishing. Moving around over towards Hog Island. A lot of redfish in Hog Island right now.
Yeah. How about the pompano? Have they been out there on that grass flat around on the outside edge?
I haven't heard a lot about pompano. Hear one story here and one story there, but it's not been like I'd go target pompano, but it's one of those fish, if you truly love the eating pompano, it's worth looking around for right now.
keep an eye out for them.
Yeah, because we've very few scattered mixed reports. Probably the best is as we get further down the harbor. There are some up in this end of the harbor, but not as many as, you know, going down the west side of the harbor, the east side probably be where I'd look for them.
Well, and you've taught me so many cool things over the years, but one of the coolest ones is always looking behind you when you're in a boat, you know, and that's hugely helpful with pompano because you're going to skip them out of your wakes all the time.
That's it's usually popular with staying alive.
Well, no. I get that. Know, I mean, that was the learning aspect.
I don't understand why people don't look behind them in a boat. They have such straight-ahead itis. Talk to any Marine Patrol guy. You know, you got a cop, you flash the lights. Most of the time, people will notice you in a little while. They'll check in the rearview mirrors. Or, you know, if they go to change lanes, they look behind them to check the blind spot. At least right. They should.
Yeah.
But as soon as they get in a boat, they turn left or right while going down the harbor and never look behind them.
Right.
There could be, you know, your buddy coming up to say hi, and he's only, you know, 8 feet behind you, and all of a sudden you turn right into him.
Right.
You know, you can hurt your friends, yourself, all kinds of stuff, or some ridiculous stranger is running way too close to your boat. But, right. You know, look behind you when you're on the water. Big thing.
Absolutely.
You'll see fish, and you'll see danger. Danger, Will Robinson, right. Danger.
Or in the other instance, when you're running around in areas that you don't not familiar with, it's a way to find your way back out.
Oh, yeah.
Because looking behind you looks a lot different than looking in front of you.
My big thing is I always tell people when we're at the seminars and stuff, if you're going up in a creek, every time you go around a bend, look behind you. Every time you get in a straightaway, when you get to the other end of the straightaway before the bend, look behind you. It's easy to remember if you see it. If you never see it, how are you going to remember it?
Right.
If all you're doing is looking in front of you, you have no idea how to get out of there.
Right, absolutely.
So, anyway, speaking of getting out of there, mica cutoff, redfish, there's some nice snook in there. You're going to work for the snook, but the redfish are pretty easy right now. Find a trough, a little bit of deeper water, and you're going to find your redfish. Not a lot of monsters, but the cutoff seems to be holding a lot of slot fish.
Right.
Getting around over into the Mayaca River, the Hog Island side, we've got some redfish. Over on the west side along that shoreline, the no-name shoreline there, is just actually been pretty good. You got a lot of ladyfish and trout over there. Coming into Tippy Canoe, hearing small trout in Tippy Canoe, some nice fishing back in there, and it's very secluded. But Elgebine is the big story. What's been going on at Elgebine?
Only being back for a few days, just hearing how crazy it's been on the snook, especially at night.
Now, Tony has been out there, and Tony seems to have it dialed in, him and his buddies.
Oh, he's got it dialed in. He was teaching a couple, and the husband came in yesterday morning to buy some baits.
Storm bunkers.
Yeah.
The 4 and 5 inch storm swim sheds, and they're just going off. What were the snook? 30?
His son got one, I think, that he said was 39 and a 36 and a 30, and several other small hookups. And then he watched a couple people get some other ones in the mid and upper 30-inch range and some that are in the slot size. You know, so the guys are kind of getting some very quality fish up there.
Any calls in the tide, incoming, outgoing?
No, I haven't. They didn't say that it was one over the other. It seems like the last several nights in general, the guys have just been whacking them, and it seems like it's starting right at sunset and going all the way through until they can last.
And the trick is stay as close to the pilings as possible. Those fish are under your feet, literally. If you're casting out for them, you're throwing away from the fish. Drop it down. Best thing to do is just walk along. And if somebody's fishing, bring your bait out of the water, walk around them, and drop back in. Don't be a jerk. Everybody gets their own place to fish. You know?
Absolutely.
Be nice to everybody, and everybody's kind of nice to you, that kind of thing. But walk along with your bait, bounce a little bit, let it hit the bottom, bring it up about 6 inches, and just walk along, bouncing it every once in a while, and go down and walk around people, and, you know, and then come back down the other side and just keep circling that pier. You know, circle the wagons, boys. The snook are coming.
Exactly.
So, anyway, working back out along the Mayaca. Anything else at Elgebine? There should be some sheephead.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I've heard of a few sheephead there during the day and some small mangrove snapper and some trout. But I think after this cold front every day from this forward, you should start to see it get considerably better.
But now it's going to be in the mid-70s tomorrow. It's going to be 80 degrees over the weekend. I haven't looked. I don't know what's going to happen next week if we got another front. I know Tuesday we got another front.
Yeah.
So hopefully that's going to keep this water temp down. The water temperature, the cooler it gets, the better it is in the upper harbor.
Mm-hmm.
Because the Gulf will be actually the coldest water, the harbor will be a little warmer, and the canals will be the warmest, the creeks will be the warmest wherever there's some deep water. So we don't have to run all the way down the Intercoastal, Bull Bay, Turtle Bay to find fish. You can stay right up here in the upper harbor and do very, very well. And
absolutely.
Our mackerel, the trout, all that, they're all coming in more and more by the day. I mean, it's amazing how many fish show up. Literally sometimes staggering. Millions of trout, millions of mackerel, millions of everything.
Yeah, it's pretty impressive.
So, working on the west side, lots of redfish.
Yeah, I've heard of a lot of redfish over there moving up and down. Same way with the snook. I've heard there's been quite a few snook starting to move up, you know, and into some of those creeks, like, what is that, Trout Creek?
Trout Creek, Gravel Creek, Blowdown Creek. I mean, they're all... the Shoe Creek, and I forget the other one, but there's a bunch of them over there.
Yeah. Yeah, I've heard that they're getting some real nice snook and a lot of the redfish hanging out at the mouths of them.
Yeah, some nice fishing along that west side. You can find some pompano along the outside on the bar, and between the bar and the mangroves, there's some trout if you just drift in the flats, but it's hard with the trout because they'll go behind the bar and work that open flat, but then they'll go right up on the bar and then just outside. So it's really hard figuring the trout on that west side because they could be behind the bar, on the bar, or just outside the bar. But, you know.
Yeah, it's one area I've never done phenomenal on trout because of trying to dial them in with the way they move back and forth like that.
It was nice when I had the tower on my boat because I could go right down that bar and actually see them on the bar and swing out and around and come back, you know, and just hit the trolling motor and just cruise very slowly with that and cast at them while I was up in the tower. But without the tower, it was really tough to see them. But that tower spooks them, too. So
right.
You got, yeah, you can see them, but they're harder to catch.
Right.
Now, switching back over to PGI, the canals.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't had a lot of reports except for snook. I know there's a lot of snook there and a ton of mangrove snappers under some of the docks.
Yeah, the mangroves, they went into that little quiet phase there for a couple weeks there, and now it's kind of started to pick back up. The juvenile tarpon are still moving around a little bit. I haven't heard much since the, you know, major cold came in, but the snook have really started to stack in there. The jacks have been okay, but very intermittent. Few trout right there at the mouths, especially right there between Ponce and Colony Point. There's some trout moving out there on that flat.
Yeah.
And that's a fun place, whether you got a boat or whether you're fishing from shore, because you can wade out there.
Alligator Creek, now just continuing down the shoreline, I know Mangrove Point has got a ton of, shouldn't say a ton, but it's got a nice population of redfish, but there's a lot of snook there right now.
Uh-huh.
If you can get across the bar, over that trough, and then across the next bar, and behind that, there's been some nice fish. What's up, Greg?
We have no phones.
I have no idea. Sorry. And then going down towards Alligator Creek, skating rink's doing real good. If you can get water, get back up in the skating rink, there's some nice fish there. But Alligator Creek's got kind of a variety pack.
Yeah. Yeah, I've heard that there's been some small bluefish in it, some trout.
Yeah, I mean, you can actually go get that nor'eastern experience and do the, you know, pretend you're in New Jersey catching, you know, baby bluefish. I don't know, do they have a name for those little tiny blues?
Snappers.
Snappers, yeah, that was it. I remember they called them something, little snapper blues.
Snapper blues.
And
I would not want to get bit by one of them little guys, or a big one for that matter, but
yeah,
those little guys are terrifying. Get them up next to the boat like that, and they just... I mean, forget that. I want nothing to do with getting hammered by one of those guys.
This guy goes and grabs crocodiles laying on the
sidewalk. I don't
want
to get bit by one of those either.
And yet he's freaked out with a bluefish. Okay, I'm just giving you insights into Robert. This is the duality of man in its peak. So, you know, Tarzan on one side... Barbie on the other.
Nice.
I didn't know where to go with that.
No, I get it.
I knew I was going to do Tarzan. I just couldn't figure out the opposite. So.
That one cut deep.
You know. So, anyway, what's that? I'll tell her I'll have to call her back.
No, she's here.
Oh, okay. Anyway, let's see. We were in Alligator Creek, bluefish. We got trout in Alligator Creek. We got some snook in there. A lot of small trout.
Right. You know, and then if you move down on the east side of the harbor, there's been a lot of redfish moving around on both the flats and at the mouths of the creeks. A variety of sizes. You know, quite a few of your rat reds have started to show up. And then there's been some more bigger legal size redfish over there too.
Can you do the east side? I'm going to help my mom get something out of the car. I'll be right back.
Yeah, no problem.
Okay.
You know, and as you know, anywhere from starting at Alligator Creek, working your way all the way down past Burnt Store, that entire east side is just kind of loaded up with redfish of all sizes, but mostly smaller guys. A lot of rat reds, but then a lot of lower end slot size fish. And then the snook have started to really move around quite a bit also. You know, you got the snook, you know, moving up into the harbor, coming up right there around Hobbs Point.
I'm back. Did you miss me?
Yep.
Okay. My mom
found... Standing here talking to myself.
Yeah, my mom found some stuff for me in a garage sale.
Nice.
Yeah, so... Anyway,
I was just talking
about
the snook.
The only thing I think the snook are already in their winter homes. I think they're moving a little bit here and there, trying to find a little bit of deeper water, a little bit better. But I think the snook that are here are already here. Because we've had cold now for, what, a month?
Yeah.
Well, yeah. Cold, that's relevant.
Yeah, it's a relative term.
Yeah.
I don't live where it's really cold, but it's cold to us.
Yeah, it's been wonderful. I have a fireplace, and
I'm very envious.
It's really
especially
nice.
The last couple nights.
Yeah, just to sit in front of the fire and imbibing some, you know, feed my addiction with the nicotine and, you know, right in front of the fireplace. And
nice.
Yeah, it's been really good. You know, some nice coffee and don't turn the heat up very much. So the house is a little chilly and then you sit in front of the fire. Yeah, it's been good. I'm really glad I'm not in Buffalo.
Oh, geez.
Oh, my God. 32 roofs collapse and... I've got a kid
more
who,
than their annual snowfall in what 2 days.
Yeah, and then I was watching that and they were showing the convection where that you could see the outside edge of the clouds picking the water off the lake and dumping it in. It
really?
Was because I wake up and I put the Weather Channel on because we live and die by the weather. You
right.
know, how many
Absolutely.
Shrimp do we have to order? Or what are we going to get for that week? You know,
is this guy going fishing offshore today or not?
Exactly. You know, everything we do revolves around the weather. So I wake up in the morning, watch Wake Up with Al and all that. And they were showing, they had a camera and they were overlooking the lake. And you could see the edge of that where it was sucking the water off the lake and blowing it into town. I mean, it was just...
That would have been cool to see.
It was one of the coolest things I've ever seen on the Weather Channel because, you know, usually it just covers the whole lake. Well, this was a very defined area where it was blowing across. You could just almost see the water being sucked off and put into the clouds and drop back as snow.
Wow.
It
would have been
staggering.
Cool to see.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I'm not a big... I don't care about the Weather Channel reality shows.
Oh,
I turn
Jesus,
it on to watch
no.
the darn weather.
Yeah.
You know, I like the guys with the tow truck, but they could put that on an hour once a week. It doesn't need to be 5 shows in a row.
Right.
I mean, you know, talk about shooting your wad all in one night. You know, it's just boom, you're done. Oh, gee, now it's just I don't want to watch it for the rest of the time.
Yeah.
But yeah, the Weather Channel has some pretty cool stuff about that up there.
That'd be cool. I'll have to watch that and see if I can catch it again.
I don't know. I don't know if you'll ever see that again. Maybe
probably
on their website.
Not.
But
yeah.
That was really cool, seeing how that lake effect snow was actually created. And you could watch the edge of it. And it was, here was the snow and just horrific weather. What? Yeah, that's fine.
But like you said, usually it covers the entire lake, so to have a defined edge of it, that'd be just neat to see.
Yeah, it was literally like somebody was a snow machine blowing it at them. I mean, just a very defined thing. If you were, you know, on the front of your house, some of those people, the front of their house was covered in 4 feet of snow, and the backyard probably had 6 inches.
Wow.
It was absolutely staggering. But anyway, going back to the east side and the snook moving up and down, out in front of Pirate Harbor, out in front of the bar, from there down to Burn Store, your best bet on Pompano, I would say from Pirate Harbor to Two Pines on the front of the bar. Thank you, Carl. So the Pompano out there is actually one of your best bets is from Pirate Harbor down to Two Pines, right on the outside of the bar, 5-6 feet of water.
What about the trout down there? Have you heard much about the trout down in that area?
Pirate Harbor is loaded up with a lot of little trout.
Inside?
Inside. There's a ton of little trout. Outside, as you get from Pirate Harbor north across that flat where that the sandbar is not very defined, it's got all that grass that comes back and forth across it, the trout are going in and out of there steady, and they're all heading out to... Yeah, I should have told Carl they were going in the back of my truck.
All right.
Yeah, so carry them all. Anyway, but there's a lot of trout coming across. How many is there, Carl?
Two.
Oh, okay, good. Thank you. Anyway, across that flat just north of the harbor, or north of Pirate Harbor, there's just tons of trout. There's some ladyfish out there. A lot of redfish in those troughs right out inside of the sandbar.
Right.
But going down to Two Pines, you got a ton of snook down in there. Burnt Store's loaded with snook.
Yeah, Burnt Store's got a lot of snook inside there.
And the mouth going into Burnt Store, if you anchor off of either side, stay out of the boating channel. It's pretty rude to block the channel. It's not against the law. It's just rude. A lot of trout in there, too, right now.
Okay.
Not much for keepers, though. I mean, it's more an activity spot.
Yeah.
If I had some kids and I would pull in, get way off into that foot, 18 inches of water off on that left side, just cast right in the middle of the channel.
Right.
And you'll catch, it'd be a great spot to take a couple of kids.
Yeah, it's a great place to teach kids about fishing. You know,
right. Just now, because I'm going to do a little ad for Dr. Dave Balustis at the Medical Pavilion Walk-In Clinic, because he's one of the few, if not the only doctor who will take hooks out of your fingers. And trout is one of the most dangerous fish in Charlotte Harbor.
Oh, absolutely.
Only for one reason. I mean, they do have the big vampire fangs and lots of teeth in their mouth, but I've stuck my fingers in their mouth many times and to no damage or very minimal damage, little scratches. But when you're holding the trout to take them off, this is one slippery fish.
Yes, it is.
I mean, one of the most slippery fish. I can't even imagine a fish that's harder to hold than a sea trout. And when you grab them...
Lizard fish.
Yeah. And then it starts. That's a good one. Okay. It'll start to slide, so you re-grip. Well, when you go to grip again, that's where the hook is.
Yeah.
And you'll get that hook through your thumb, through your index finger. It happens all the time. So Dr. Dave up the Medical Pavilion Walk-In Clinic, he's on Harbor... they actually take hooks out. You don't have to go to the emergency room, because if you call your doctor and tell him you have a hook in your finger, he's going to send you to the emergency room, and that is a lot of money.
It's a
ridiculous amount of money. And Dave takes mostly insurance and stuff. Dave's a good customer in the store. He's a fisherman. Two things we always try and send Dave: if you get stuck by a fish, a fin or a catfish or anything,
stingray, any of that.
Yeah, he knows the right antibiotics for the marine bacterias, and that's really important, because those, you can get some really nasty infections, and if your doctor just gives you a general antibiotic, the wrong one, it doesn't work.
Won't work at all.
So go see Dr. Dave up there, and he'll take care of your marine injuries, if you got hooks in your finger or whatever. But I'm going to strongly recommend, if you're using lures with two treble hooks or three treble hooks, flatten the barbs for the trout, at least on the front treble hook and maybe the middle treble hook. If you got a three hook lure, which I don't know why you'd use a three hook lure, but if you got two treble hooks, the front treble hook, pinch the barbs down at least. They'll hold on the back, but it makes it much easier to get the fish off, easier to get the hooks out of you. If you get them in the back, that one back, at least, well, I flatten the hooks
on all of them.
Yeah, I don't even bother. I don't like barbless treble hooks because the fish won't stay on. When you flatten the barb with your pliers and you just take the point down, they'll stay on the hook because you've got a little tiny bump there that acts as kind of a fall-off protector.
Right.
But trout is so dangerous, and not because of the fish, because of your hook. They're so slimy. They're so slippery.
Well, they're slimy, but I think also what happens is because we catch them so regularly, it's not like you're going to catch one here and one there. When you get into them, you're getting into a school of them, and it's sometimes 20, one 30, every 50. Cast.
Yeah, it's,
and you start to get cocky and complacent, and just it becomes almost a routine, and you just grab that fish not really thinking.
It's one of the fish.
And the moment it wiggles, you hammer it, and then you're hammered.
When I was doing charters, I didn't have any problem when people want to take snook off the hook or even redfish, even sharks. I would, you know, gladly hand somebody a shark and say, here, you know, and they'd take the hook out and do all that. Right. But with a sea trout, I used to insist I was the only one to take them off because I had too many times the hooks run through their finger and then I've got to poke the hook out or rip it back out or send them up to the emergency room depending upon, you know, what it was, or actually send them to Dr. Dave. But anyway, just a little point. Be careful Absolutely. With your sea trout and no dry hands on a sea trout. If when you release that fish, you've got slime all over your hand and you've got to wash it off, that means that fish is going to die. 50-50 shot he lives. At best, I'm going to say 70% chance he's going to get sores and die. So no dry hands, no dry rags, no dry gloves.
Yeah.
If it's your hand, your wet, your gloves, or your rag is wet, you do not get any slime off the fish. It doesn't stick to it. If it's dry, you've killed that fish. You're going, oh, I catch and release. And no, you're catching and killing.
Yeah.
You know, don't give yourself that old warm.
Torturing.
Yeah, and it's actually torturing the fish before you kill it. So no warm, fuzzy feeling. If you've got a dry hand or a dry rag and you release that fish, no, shame on you. Absolutely. It takes 2 seconds. You have a bait bucket, put your hand in the bait bucket, put it in the live well, put it overboard, get your hand wet, handle the trout. It's not that much messing around. You can afford that extra 3 seconds.
Absolutely.
Now, if you're going to eat him, you know, and he's definitely legal size, handle him with a dry rag. He's going to die anyway. That's right. All good. But we don't want anybody thinking they're doing the right thing and actually doing it wrong. That's critical to me. I hate waste.
Absolutely.
If you're going to catch and release alive. So anyway, I want to switch back over and go to Cape Hayes.
Okay. Cape Hayes, it should, as it warms up a little bit over the weekend, you should start to see some more bonnet heads moving around over there. Which
That's
are just
really weird. As it gets cool, we seem to intensify in the bonnets.
Mm-hmm.
And every other shark, we get...
Leaves.
Yeah, we get like... Right now, we've got 5-10% of the sharks we had in July.
Oh, yeah.
And except the bonnets.
Yeah.
And they just seem to thrive in this.
They love it. I think they actually move up onto the flats to really feed heavily on the crabs and the shrimp.
Well, they love shrimp. That's for sure.
That's one of their favorite things to eat.
I've actually... When I've caught them on a chunk of fish, I'm always like, oh, my God, I caught a bonnet head on a sardine.
Yeah.
And
usually when that happens, it's when you're out in the center of the harbor messing around yep. with whatever else.
And
I've never hooked a bonnet head on the flats on anything but a shrimp.
Yeah, it's the one fish out there that's just loves eating shrimp. It accounts for the flavor of the meat, too.
Yeah.
And it's got that kind of mild flavor. It's not my cup of tea. I prefer the sharp nose way better. But it's not like asking somebody, do you like strawberry or do you like peanut butter? Or do you like chocolate? I mean, it's a flavor issue, not a quality issue.
Right.
And it's like I'm not a big sea trout fan. I can eat the heck out of sand bream, mullet, all these other fish. But two fish I'm not that crazy about that I found over the years is sea trout and bonnet. Now, like my dad... Vinny, a lot of these guys, sea trout is their favorite fish.
Absolutely.
They would rather eat sea trout than anything.
Yeah, Vinny was a nut over it.
Yeah, Vinny was, I mean, we always had to keep, as he got older and couldn't get around, we would always keep big trout for Vinny. And to me, I was glad to give it to him because yuck.
Yeah,
I don't like sea trout, you know. Now, Robin Leonard's got a ceviche thing.
Yeah, her ceviche is pretty impressive.
And you cook it with the lime juice and the lemon and mm-hmm. all that. It's not even cooked. It's like pickled.
Well, yeah, the acidity of the tomatoes and the lime juice just starts to cook it.
Yeah, it's cooked through the juices of the fruits and veggies you put in there. But anyway, we were at Cape Hayes.
Have you heard of any pompano over there on Cape Hayes? Because I know that's usually a good haunt for them.
Along the western side of Cape Hayes, in front of Bull Bay and Turtle Bay, there are some over there. If I was going to look for them, I'd look for them there. Not so much out by the Cape Hayes Reef, because you got a few gag grouper and some snapper there at the Cape Hayes Reef.
Any Spanish on that?
I haven't heard a ton of it. There should be. There should be gazillions there.
Right.
But I don't really heard. I know there's going up into Turtle Bay. If you get just past the manatee signs, go up, idle your boat up into the wind because it is, you know, and then drift back across that flat. Get as much of a drift going as you can. put shrimp under a popping cork about 2.5 feet and maybe 3 feet, and a little split shot down to keep that shrimp in the water. If the wind's blowing a little harder, you got to use a bigger split shot. You don't want the shrimp dragging on top of the water. And just make a good cast, leave your bail open, get out another 10 or 15 feet of line. I want the popping corks 30, 50, 60 feet away from the boat as I'm drifting, because the boat's going to spook them, then they're going to come right back around and hit your baits.
Right.
So don't have them very close to the boat doing this. It makes it more interesting than longer fight. But just pop those corks as you drift, and once you get to the other end, just and leave your motor all the way down. Do not have your motor raised up while you're drifting. Your motor needs to be in its lowest position. That way it'll catch first, and the boat will just swing around, and you'll know, okay, I got to get out of here. If your motor's all the way up, you'll be aground by the time
you even try to do anything about it. Yeah.
Your motor's your instant safety guard. As it's all the way down, it'll catch, reel in your lines, raise the motor up a little bit, back out to deep water, go back to the other side, and drift again. Some redfish way back in the back of Turtle Bay, and nice snook out in the front of Turtle Bay on the sandbars.
Oh, really?
Yeah, some real nice snook fishing out there. You got a lot of deep water with shallow water, and first thing in the morning, they're all hanging out in that deep water. If the sun comes out, like it's been today, I don't know if it's going to, but with that bright sunshine in the afternoon, they move right up on the shallows and look for them in the grass and right around the mangroves, but not so much under them as right close to them.
And we've only got, what, one more week left of snook season?
Mm-hmm.
Something like that.
Yeah, I'm getting out before there. Terry wants her snook. She wants her snook dinner this year.
There you go.
I'm taking Terry down to that end of the harbor, and I know I could do it around here, but she likes fishing those bays down there, so we're going to go down and try.
Beautiful down there.
Do that. Turtle Bay thing for some nice snook. So anyway, Bull Bay, again, trout in the middle, some nice big ladyfish out in the middle. We got a lot of snook around the border perimeter of Bull Bay, whether it's in the front or around the mangroves on the perimeter. The redfish seem to have moved back a little bit further, more on the backside of Bull Bay. I don't know, what's that creek back there? Is that Widden Creek or whatever it is?
No, Widden Creek's on the outside. That goes into Bogus Hole, doesn't
it? Yeah, Bogus Hole. That's what I'm talking about, that flat out in front of there, kind of on the way to the tailing flats. If you come out of the Bull Bay proper and go to the backside Bull Bay, you're going to do way better on the redfish back there.
What about the sheep's head or the mangrove snapper right there at the entrance and that deep cut there? Have you heard anything about that?
I haven't heard, but I'm going to call tons of sheephead there,
because
that whole deep trough as you're going into Bull Bay should just be loaded.
Yeah, usually it is.
Gallagher's cut, but I mean, I would guess right now there's 20-some-inch sheephead in there.
Oh, yeah, I would imagine so.
I mean there's going to be a lot of little ones, 8, 10, 12, 14 inches, but there's some monsters, and I've been hearing about that for 2-3 weeks now. 10, 15, 20 sheephead in the school, and some big ones. I mean, 20 plus inches.
It's cool.
So
it's cool to see them tailing too sometimes over there.
Mm-hmm.
Look at all the redfish. Nope, that's sheep's head.
Yeah, people don't realize that. It's like going to the Keys and you see a bonefish tailing, you get up and it's a cowfish. You're like, really?
Yeah.
Makes me, Anyway, but getting around to the tailing flats, working up there, you got some redfish, trout, kind of what you would expect to be there.
Right.
And going back into Widden Creek, catfish and all them, some beautiful redfish back up in there, and there's some intermittent snook. To find snook back there, just find a cut between two islands with a deeper trough in it, and it's going to have a bunch of snook. But getting up around Placida for you shore fishermen, anybody walking the piers.
That should be really good right now for the mangrove snook, or not the mangrove snook, I'm sorry, the sheephead should be starting to really dump in there hard. I mean, with the reports we've been getting for the last 3 weeks, there should be a very, very good numbers, consistent numbers.
The water's cold enough. I'm not hearing tons of it, not getting tons of requests for the fiddlers yet. But I think that's due to the weather. I think people just don't want to go out in that colder weather, and they like the water cool and the air hot.
Exactly.
I don't blame them. I have not been doing much outside. I had a lot of yard work to do, and I should really enjoy working the yard when it's just nice and cool. But I've been going home and going upstairs, lighting a fire and hanging out.
Right, I just haven't. Exactly.
Took yesterday off and just basically hung out. Hey, guys. So anyway, we've been doing a lot with that, but there's a lot of trout up there right now. The sheephead doing well.
Snook have been there at night pretty consistently.
Yeah, I'm going to call the 17 or the 15 suspending bomber, my favorite up there, and cast it parallel to the dock and just reel it back in. You don't have to do anything fancy to it. It works really good.
Yeah.
Working our way up the intercoastal in Lemon Bay, we get a lot of trout up there along the ICW and across the flats, and a lot of rat reds have moved in. A lot of them around those islands. As you get closer to the mouth of Ski Alley, you got a lot of little islands north and south of there. A lot of rat reds and some pompano in the Ski Alley and up into the Stump Pass itself, along with trout and ladyfish.
What about the whiting? I'm sure the whiting are probably doing fair along
Should
there.
Should be. I haven't heard a thing. Nobody's talking. Yeah. So I'd
say... I think the weather plays a huge role in all this with the scattered reports that we're getting.
Yeah.
You know, unfortunately, everyone comes down here for our beautiful weather, but the moment it turns even remotely crappy, it gets very, very quiet.
Unless it's their first day down, then they're out there white-legged in shorts and t-shirts walking the beach, and it's literally 60 degrees and they're freezing their butts off going, it's beautiful.
Yes.
You know, because, well, they just left minus 10.
Yeah.
And so 30 degrees is kind of nice, but you need sunshine for 60 degrees to be nice.
Exactly.
You know, when it's bright and sunny, I get the whole thing, but boy, when it's overcast, yeah, not me.
No, makes it tougher to swallow.
Yeah, it's still cold. I don't care where you're from.
Right.
You know, but walking along the beaches, taking the beach walk down, just about anywhere, I'd be casting the banana jig, silly jig, whatever. And just kind of mixed bag of stuff. There's whiting, flounder, possible pompano, possible Spanish mackerel, possible ladyfish, possible snook, possible anything. I haven't had a ton of reports, but right. With this weather, there should just be lots and lots of schools. And big schools of sheephead moving in.
Yeah, you should be able to come across little droves of those as they're moving in. You know, I mean, they're moving in from some of those nearshore reefs and from up north or whatever they're coming from.
Yeah.
So you should be able to see little groups of them.
And we still have in the Gulf, we've got king mackerel out there. You've got a few of those big 40-some-inch redfish left. There's a gag grouper to be caught, and trolling seems...
Yeah, the gags have really seemed to turn on in the last 10 days, 2 weeks.
Yeah, well, the water's chilly, and they like that.
Yeah, you know, and like you said, the guys that are trolling out there are trolling those stretch 20s and 30s out there and having very good success with.
I think we're sold out of the big pink and green bomber again.
Are we?
That thing has really been working. I mean, one guy sees a guy come up and sees that big pink and green lure, and they coming in, what's big and pink and green? Bomber, okay. It's a CD bomber, a certified depth bomber.
Oh, okay.
And...
I know Barb was just working on those a little bit ago, but I'm not sure which one she was working on.
Yeah, we got a low of 62 tonight, a high of 83 tomorrow, with a low of 67 on Saturday night, highs 84 on Sunday, low of 71 Sunday night, and it's hanging in the 80s and 60s for the next several days, so it's going to be a great time to come to Florida. Now, Tuesday, we do have a chance of storms again.
What's the Gulf temperature at?
That's what I'm looking, Gulf water temp.
You know, I mean, with that water temp, you know, last week, the Kings should be anywhere from 2 to as far as 25 miles out, but if it got that chilly, they might have moved out farther. Same way with the Spanish. The Spanish sometimes don't like it when it drops hard. They don't mind the cooler water, but if it drops quick, they'll move out a little farther. I've heard the grunts and the porgies have been doing really good up until the last few days with this wind.
Well, I think a lot of it's just at St. Pete, we've got 66 degree Gulf temp.
Whew.
And that's actually pretty chilly for this time of year.
Yeah,
and which is a good thing. I'm looking, Key West is at 73, Naples at 72. So that puts us right around 70 degrees prime king mackerel temperature.
Yeah, perfect.
68 to 72 is our ideal water temp for king mackerel. So I'm gonna say we're right in the running on that. And so the kings are out there, but you get Spanish mackerel, you get bonita, a little bit of blackfin tuna still going on out there. You get out there even deeper, you're gonna find some other really amazing fish, but. This is all starting within 3 miles of shore.
Right.
And we had kings that you could cast for from the beach.
Yeah, but that was awesome.
Yeah, they're actually moving out a little bit. We're hearing
that's
a couple
of those
of them
where timing is everything, though.
Yeah,
it's usually such a short-lived period there where you never know how it's going to work out.
Right. So,
but when it does, it's awesome.
I wish we had a better reports for you in the Gulf, but it's been windy. I mean, we've had some 30-mile-an-hour winds here recently. Yes. So I don't have a lot of good reports from the Gulf, but I think everything is just going to light up. It's at great water temps right now.
Yeah.
Coming back through the passes, Boca, Captiva, or Boca and Gasparilla, some nice schools of sheephead going through.
Mm-hmm.
Captiva, we're hearing reports of Pompano and
I've heard there's been
Spanish.
Some real good gags down there.
Gag grouper, yeah.
I've heard the gag's been real good down there in Captiva and redfish.
If I was going to pick one pass to do grouper fishing, it would be Captiva right now.
Right.
I'd get some sardines or some squid and just drift Captiva, try and get in that deeper water holes. And there's some nice guy grouper, actually keeper size
I'd
there.
I'd be throwing those big, like, what are they, the 2 and 3 ounce rattle traps.
Yeah, that big rattle trap?
Yeah.
Yeah, that would be a great
Dave
one.
Dave Hoke uses that all the time down there and crushes them all throughout down there, so I'd be.
But again, you got to get them deep, boys and girls. It's not a cast and retrieve, it's a cast, let it sink, and then retrieve.
Right.
If you don't get some depth out of it, you're not getting the fish out of it.
No.
And the rattle trap
definitely a tricky lure, but yeah, I think it'd be fun to practice with and learn. And
it's easy. I mean, it's a real idiot bait. That's what my dad says. I like it.
I'm talking about the depth part of it, dial on that part in because the retrieving.
Figure about 2 foot a second. So kind of go through with your depth finder, see where it is, and those big rattle traps are going to fall a little better than a foot a second. So if you figure 2, you're pretty good shape. And if you're seeing 10 feet, just count to 8 before, or 10 feet, count to 5 before you reel it in.
Okay.
And if you're not getting a hit, then count to 6 and see where it goes, because the bottom's so rough there, it's a shame to lose a rattle trap.
Yeah.
But once you get it dialed in, you'll actually catch some really amazing fish out of there. Down by Redfish Pass, we still have some redfish in Redfish Pass. How weird is that?
Yeah, imagine that.
Yeah, you've got some snook through there. A lot of trout coming in and out. Same with Ponarasa. A lot of big snook underneath the bridges. And
I've heard the trout fishing down there throughout the whole Pine Island Sound has been not great numbers, but very, very surprisingly quality fish.
20-inch fish on the average.
Yeah, so I've heard of some 28 and 29-inch trout in the last 2-3 weeks.
Yeah, it's been pretty amazing all over.
Pretty big fish.
You get up on that east side, and if you're in a school and you catch one, he's 14 inches, they're going to be 13 3/4 to 14 1/2. You got to move.
Yeah.
And you can't move 20, 30 feet. You've got to move a half a mile to find a different school of fish.
Absolutely.
You know, if you're looking for a keeper and you're in 14 1/2 inch fish, you're going to have to go a quarter mile, half mile away to find a different school. Because
absolutely.
Once you find them, they're all within an inch of each other, and you know what you're going to catch after that.
Huh.
So don't think, okay, I'm going to go through 100 of these and find my keepers. It usually doesn't happen.
Yeah, you go through 100 and maybe find one, if you're lucky. And it's not by much that it's...
Yeah, you're pinching that tail pretty hard to get them. So anyway, let's see. Where are we now? We're back kind of up Pine Island Sound.
Mount Lachey we haven't covered.
Mount Lachey. Tons of snook under the bridge. We got redfish just to the south of there, over the south and west. If you're going south down that channel, those flats on the west side, the Gulf side, are just amazing for a lot of redfish down there. Not a lot of huge ones, but a lot of redfish. Coming north up off there.
How about the sheephead around the bridge there?
The sheephead are loading up there in Mount Lachey pretty good. The bridge is actually doing really well. A lot of the most of the docks all have snook on them. Mount Lachey is a good time to go down there and experiment around. As you come north, heading towards...
All those Cape Coral canals should be starting to load up, too, with them.
Oh, yeah. Cape Coral's doing real good on snook. But a lot of those guys, I don't think they listen enough to radio fishing, because a lot of them travel 15, 20, 30 minutes to get out, and they're not trolling.
Right. They don't even do that here.
Oh, no. A lot of our customers do.
But it took us 10 years of...
Yeah. You know, if you're taking 15, 20 minutes to get out of the canal, put a lure out and fish your way out.
Absolutely.
I mean, the trip started when you left the dock.
Absolutely.
You know, you pushed away from the dock, the fishing's on.
Right.
I mean, your neighbor's dock might have more snook in it than any other place in the harbor.
Right.
So, you know, troll your way out, troll your way in.
I've had some of my best fishing days coming into the canal and going out of the canal. I mean, there and get skunked, and it's like, hey, I caught 4 snook and a jack on the way out, and I caught 3 snook and 4 jacks coming back in.
Storm twitch on one rod holder and the 15 SIG bomber on the other one. That SIG bomber is always one of my favorites. Now, you can use the X-Wraps, you can use all those, but those would be my two picks right now.
SIG, that's the greenback, right?
That's the greenback, yeah.
And the AX is the redhead white body?
The 109.
AX 109?
Or 104.
104.
AXS 104, yeah. But anyway, trolling in the canals for snook right now, great, great amount of fun. A lot of people doing it because of the windy weather. You can troll in the canals and catch lots of fish, and it's
absolutely
a great time.
Absolutely.
Anything else? Oh, freshwater is just going crazy right now. If you're into bass and crappie, now's the time to come. And I mean, there's bass out there. They're doing real nice 2 to 7 pounds.
Yes.
I mean,
a lot of that 2 to 4 pound range, but the 6 and 7s are not
uncommon.
Not that uncommon by any stretch.
No, you should be able to, if you catch, unlike what we were talking about, the trout, you find an area where there's some bass and you're catching some 12 and 14 inches, you're going to find your 20-inch bass in there.
Absolutely.
I mean, just keep working them. He'll come up and get it.
And it seems like every one of the canals have really turned on in the little ponds and stuff. It's not like it's just one isolated area. I'm hearing good reports in Gulf Cove, Northport, what's that, Tropical Gulf Acres down in Punta Gorda, down in Burnt Store. Some of those golf course guys have been catching some nice fish down there.
No,
I mean,
it's all
really
good right
turned
now.
On. And then the crappie doing the same thing. The crappie, though, for the land guys, that's a tough one. You find them, they're there. But you got to move around a lot until you find
work
them.
The different canals, figure out where they are, and try and find some branches overhanging the water.
Especially
they
the
do
pepper
like
trees.
Structure to, yeah, pepper trees seem to really attract them.
That's the only good quality about a pepper tree. Other than that, they're horrible.
Yeah, they're just a nightmare, except the crappie like them. And I think it's just because there's so many branches and everything else in the water, it provides them that Christmas tree like structure. And that's where they like to spawn.
Right.
And it's like a Florida Christmas tree because they just grow and there's tons of branches and roots and everything else all going every which way in the water. And it seems to be where they want to hang out.
Yep. I would definitely give that a shot.
Yeah. Beetle spins, minnows.
You and I got to do that this winter and go try for some crappie.
Yeah, well, I've got a porta boat. I got a fold up boat that we can slide in right over here and work down that one good canal.
That'd be cool.
Oh, yeah. So, yeah, I bought that porta boat.
It's been, 10 years probably since you and I have freshwater fished.
Probably, yeah. We haven't done much of it. Mm-mm. I got 2 freshwater boats now, so.
Cool.
We're going to work that out. All right, anything else we need to talk about? Middle of the harbor, Alligator Creek Reef, got some gag grouper on it, some mangrove snappers, trolling through the deep holes alongside of the reef, over by the Cape Hayes Reef, producing some really nice fish. You catch a few shorts on the gags, but you still have time to get your keeper gags out of the harbor trolling. Troll anything that's going to go down about 15 feet. And the trick is to get them out behind the boat, get them digging the bottom, and then crank them up 1 or 2 cranks just so they're not tapping the bottom.
Right.
And if it taps the bottom every once in a while, that's not a bad thing. But you don't want them digging constantly in the bottom. It's no good. It's a dredge at that point.
Yeah.
But you really want to just get them almost tapping the bottom. And they can be very close to the boat because these, you know, the 15 dive, you get certified depth from Bomber. You got the Rapala. You got the Mans. There's a bunch of different companies that make all these lures that go down. The one nice thing about Rapala is on the box will tell you how deep that lure goes. Every single box. And I love using the Rapalas because I know what I'm getting out of it.
Yeah. That certified depth goes even one step further. It actually tells you if you've got 20-pound test line and you let out this much scope, that's the depth that it'll be at.
And it's, Bomber makes an amazing product like that. Yeah. And, you know, I've had a couple requests for some other lures, other brands that a lot more money and do the exact same thing. And I'm sorry, we carry 3 or 4 different types of depth lures, and
they work fine and they're less money.
They're
perfectly fine, if
I mean,
not
you
better
can,
personally.
You can buy them for at least a reasonable price. Some of these lures are just overpriced, and is feeding the madness. Always keep in mind when you're looking at a lure that was $8.95 one year and it's $12 and $14 this year, that's greed. Yeah. And we don't need to support that. We don't need to tell people it's okay to overcharge for no particular reason than they want to.
It's a prettier package.
Yeah, big deal. I mean, not when you can buy a Rapala or Rapala at a reasonable price, and then you get these other ones, and they're not even made here.
Yeah.
You know, they're imports. I'm sorry. Just because you feel the need to make more money doesn't make it right.
Exactly. Yeah,
should have managed your company better.
Yeah.
I mean, Bomber makes a good living on reasonable price lures.
Great price lures.
And then you've got Rapala, you got Storm, you got Rattle Trap.
Maverick.
You can buy Mavericks. You can buy Rattle Trap for $4.49.
Yeah.
And
exactly.
Paying $18-$20 for a lure? Okay.
Or in some instances, $30 for the same size.
Like, oh, yeah. 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 All right. I mean, it's good, but I mean, if you're catching a lot of fish, it's worth it. But
and if you want it, we'll special order it. But
well,
know,
we've
don't,
got
don't
the
hesitate.
Live Target. We've got the $18-$20 lures.
But some of them, you know, some of them we just don't have because you can't carry them all.
Yeah.
I mean, we can't literally carry
and
everything.
And we've tried a lot of the different brands, but it's really hard when someone comes up to you and says, is this really worth that money? I said, well, this is the one I use, and it's $6, you know?
Yeah.
So, anyway, I guess that's about it for this week's Radio Fishing. Let me get rid
of... And the other thing is, like, you're talking about that you use this one because it's $6. And granted, lures, there's not a great deal of money to be made in it, but you own the bait shop. You can pick and choose what you want out of here. And you pick the $6 lure over a $20 lure. That says a lot about it because it works.
Yeah. <You know? laughs> I was telling a guy, you know, he was looking at these. I said, but this lure is the hottest thing we got. It catches the Storm Twitch. I said,
yeah.
It catches everything. And he's looking at, and he bought the $19 lure. I'm thinking to myself, no, wait a minute. I'm the one who makes, because I get a percentage markup, you know?
Yeah.
So I'm making more money on an $18 lure than I am on a $6 lure. And you would think they would kind of get that as a clue.
Yeah.
You're trying to steer them into a product that actually catches more fish for less money.
Yeah.
Oh, well.
Hey, you try.
You try.
That's all we can do.
That's all we can do. But I'm glad to have you back. I'm glad you're in Costa Rica. I'm glad wrestling the crocodiles did not, you know, damage
all my
you.
Appendages.
Yeah, you got all your appendages, and the bugs that bit you weren't disastrous. So.
And thank you.
So, anyway, it's nice to have you back. This is Fish and Frank, Robert in the chair across from me, and this is Radio Fishing. And thanks, everybody, for listening. And if you're up north, I hope you're warm. I hope you're safe. And I hope you get a chance to vacation in Florida. You know,
yeah.
You know,
an excuse.
Yeah, you got a great excuse. I mean, if you're doing construction right now, you're sitting on unemployment time anyway. You know, find a hotel or a house down here in Florida. We got some beautiful weather coming up. It's going to be gorgeous. And take care, everybody up there, and be safe cleaning your roofs. Be safe with everything. And we wish you all the best and best of luck getting out of there.
Yeah.
We still got a couple of hotel rooms left in Florida, so
yeah.
We'll see you down here, and thanks again. Bye-bye.